item 171.
Authorize the city attorney to take legal action against certain opioid manufacturers and distributors and other appropriate parties to recover public funds that have been and will be expended by the city as a result of the manufacture and distribution of prescription opioids.
So this is a resolution being brought forward by all five members of the Portland City Council, and that should underscore the importance of this issue. As everyone is keenly aware, and as our last communications just highlighted, America is in the throes of an opioid epidemic. According to the CDC, opioids, including prescription opioids, killed more than 42,000 people in 2016. That's more than any year on record, and 40% of those deaths were due to prescription opioids. That's more than any year on record. I want to underscore that point. And my suspicion is that when 2017 is tallied, the results are going to be even worse. This crisis is felt acutely here in the state of Oregon. I want to give you a statistic that I heard for the first time just last week. Last year in the state of Oregon, 55 opioids were prescribed for every man, woman, and child in the state of Oregon. 55. So if you didn't use your 55, somebody else did. And as significant as that number is, 55 for every man, woman, and child in the state of Oregon, that's actually down from its high of about 75 prescriptions for every man, woman, and child in Oregon. According to the Oregon Health Authority, three Oregonians die every week due to prescription opioid use. Further, we know that opioid abuse is a major contributor to homelessness. With chronic homelessness on the rise in our community and many of those experiencing homelessness reporting addiction issues, local jurisdictions like the city of Portland are on the front lines of the opioid crisis. We're investing record amounts to address homelessness. We've committed to dramatically increasing the number of supporting housing units in our community, many of which will go to those suffering addiction issues. Our police officers respond to an increasing number of drug-related calls for service. Our firefighters provide life-saving medication to overdose victims. Opioid addiction can even contribute to higher care costs for the city. At the same time, drug manufacturers have shown a reckless disregard for the danger their products pose. Drug companies continue to take in profits while cities like Portland are faced with significant budget shortfalls. This resolution will authorize action by the city to recoup some of the funds we spent due to opioid addiction while holding drug manufacturers accountable. This is a much-needed step to help stem the tide of opioid addiction in our community. Thank you and welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. A lot of what I plan to say, I think Mayor Wheeler just shared, but I'll go
feel
over.
Feel free to say it again.
I might say some of it again. My name is Naomi Sheffield. I'm a deputy city attorney. I handle complex litigation for the city, and I'm here to discuss the resolution authorizing the city attorney to proceed with affirmative litigation against both the opioid manufacturers and distributors. And I'll cover three areas and then address any questions you have if I'm able to. So I wanted to first address what the opioid epidemic is and how it's affected Oregon and Portland, the role that prescription drug manufacturers and distributors have played in the opioid epidemic, and then the causes of action that the city might bring and the current, how the litigation would likely play out. So the opioid epidemic, broadly speaking, is characterized by the significant increase in abuse of prescription and non-prescription opioids since about 2000. The National Survey for Drug Use and Health in 2010 showed that approximately 12 million Americans reported using painkillers for non-medical purposes. This abuse has led to a threefold increase in overdose deaths in the last 15 years. And as Mayor Wheeler was saying, a significant increase just in total opioid prescription overdoses as well during that period. And Oregon has similarly seen an increase in overdose hospitalizations and deaths during this period. Across the country, states, counties, cities, public hospitals, families, and others have borne the cost of this epidemic. The state and local governments are forced to pay directly for increased prescription opioids, for medical treatment and addiction services, for drug treatment, and they also indirectly pay the costs for increased crime, housing issues, and jails. Billions of dollars are spent annually across the United States to address the epidemic, and these costs don't even take into account the economic and non-economic impacts that the epidemic has had on communities. The city of Portland has incurred costs, as Mayor Wheeler discussed, in several areas, including but not limited to Portland Fire and Rescue. In 2016, responded to 3,475 calls for overdoses and administered over 400 doses of naloxone, which is the medication designed to reverse an opioid overdose. Additionally, approximately 50% of the calls that are addressed by Portland Police Bureau's Drug and Vice Division related to drugs are related to opioids. The city also, as you are all well aware, invests millions of dollars in the Joint Office of Homelessness Services, which, in addition to many of the programming that it provides, provides supportive housing services that assist people living with drug addiction. And finally, the city directly incurs costs as a self-insured provider for its employees and their families, so paying for prescription drugs and for the cost of treatment that employees and family members who are addicted to opioids. The public health crisis corresponds with the massive increase in prescription opioid sales. I actually think that Mayor Wheeler's numbers might have been from Multnomah County, because I think Oregon actually peaked at 101.2 prescription drugs for every 100 people in the year 2010.
So you're saying I was being too optimistic.
Multnomah County, I think, were your numbers. If I don't have Multnomah County's right here, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
Either way.
They are going down, which is a good thing, but it has been high, and it increased, peaking right around 2010 to 2012 around the country and in Oregon. Prescription opioid manufacturers have each made and continue to make billions of dollars annually on the sale of prescription opioids. These same manufacturers were the ones who encouraged the use of long-term use of opioids to treat chronic pain and at the same time downplayed the risks of addiction related to higher dosage and long-term use of prescription opioids. These manufacturers marketed to doctors and patients, encouraging a greater use of opioids to address non-cancer pain. The distributors, who are also the subject of the resolution, there are approximately three distributors who dominate the market share, and all distributors have a legal obligation to monitor the ordering and dispersal of prescription opioids to make sure that they aren't diverted into the community. And all three major manufacturers have had action taken against them by federal and state agencies due to their failure to uphold those obligations to monitor and report the diversion of opioids or suspicious behavior. So the litigation, hundreds of cities, I think about 370 at this point, and counties around the country have sued the manufacturers and distributors in federal court or in state court and have been removed. And these cases in December of 2017, a multi-district litigation was formed, and these cases were transferred to the Northern District of Ohio. So if the city were to file suit, we would likely be transferred into the multi-district litigation in the Northern District of Ohio. The cases set forth various causes of action depending on state law and the harms faced by the individual jurisdictions, but the city would likely allege causes of action for public nuisance, negligence, and RICO, and Oregon RICO. The multi-district litigation is moving forward quickly. I think there's an expectation that the judge would like to push for a resolution, and so action at this point in time would be very timely. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I have a couple questions. So the way we would structure this particular litigation is that we would handle it in-house?
We would not. We would handle. There are a number of outside firms, and one of the firms that we've worked with before for the Monsanto litigation has a about 60, I think, jurisdictions. So we would have an outside firm that has a number of other cases going
forward. But we piggyback off of the existing, and then our city attorney's office would monitor the litigation.
Correct.
And you mentioned that there's a number of claims which have been asserted, including RICO, which I believe is a criminal conspiracy charge, as well as some other related claims. What are the potential damages that we can recover, and what do we have to prove as a city in terms of getting a recovery?
So just so you know, the RICO charges, there is criminal RICO, but this would be civil RICO charges. So
civil conspiracy.
Civil conspiracy, yeah, exactly. So there are the potential, I mean, I think the potential damages that the city has probably looks to be in the millions of dollars, and the recoverable damages will vary based on a number of factors. First of all, I mean, the total damages across the United States probably far exceed what the distributors and manufacturers are ultimately going to be able to pay. So there's obviously going to be some, if there's a settlement, some reduction because of that. But in terms of the damages, again, the kind of what I discussed are the likely damages, and I think we're looking at a few million dollars annually and looking backwards. So for a nuisance claim, we would be kind of proving that the city would prove that they created, for the negligence claim, they'd be proving that they had an obligation to, kind of meet certain standards, and they acted negligently and caused the harm. And I think for the manufacturers, we're looking at a lot of what they've said, and one of the cause of action that other people have brought are consumer deception claims. So a lot of the advertising and selling and pushing of these drugs to doctors and patients is the basis of the negligence claim, that kind of pushing it has been negligent.
And also, is the Attorney General involved in this litigation?
So my understanding right now is the Oregon Attorney General is involved in a multi-state investigation under the Consumer Protection Act. Okay. I don't believe they filed suit. Some states have filed suit, but I don't believe Oregon has at this point. And the state would not be in federal litigation because the state it wouldn't be removed to federal court.
So what we're talking about is a multi-pronged approach to recover damages on the basis of the harm caused by the misconduct of these companies.
Correct. So and obviously Multnomah County has filed because of their harms. They have been removed to federal court and transferred to the Northern District of Ohio. So it's multi-pronged and then multi-theory. Again, the state will likely pursue a different legal theory because they have different legal theories available to them.
I just want just make one personal observation because I have, you know, I'm currently with my health challenges. I have about a 3 pages of single space drugs that I take at various times, and something that I've learned about the drugs that really pack a wallop is the smaller the pill, sometimes the bigger the mischief. Mm-hmm. And you know, OxyContin is a very small pill, and yet has enormous consequences when you take it. Another example of that is steroids. A steroid pill is a tiny little pill which completely turns your nervous system upside down. And it is remarkable how liberally they are prescribed in our country for various laudable purposes, but they are given out very easily, and they have huge impacts on people's behavior. So thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Saltzman, did you have any questions?
No, I didn't.
Very good. Public testimony? Does that complete your presentation?
That's all.
Very good. Public testimony on this item, Carla?
Yes, we have 4 people signed up. The first 3 are Mary Sipe, Steve Novick, and Shedrick J. Wilkins.
Good morning. And Carla, could you just confirm for me the main monitors and the...
It is still working.
Still
up
working.
Here.
Thank
They're
you.
Working on,
yeah. Good. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Why don't you start us off today?
Mary Sipe. Deadliest drug epidemic in U.S. history. That's what we're dealing with. For years while working in the healthcare field, I've watched the opioid manufacturers, motivated by their obscene profits, push their highly addictive, dangerous drugs using deceptive marketing to encourage physicians to overprescribe. Shortly after these drugs were approved by the FDA, the drug manufacturers convinced the medical community to establish pain as a vital sign. Each time a patient is seen, they're asked to rate their pain and how effectively their provider treated their pain. Physicians and hospitals were evaluated on how effectively they treated patients' pain. Pain clinics began cropping up everywhere. The drug manufacturers knowingly misrepresented the serious risks of addiction. As a result of this corporate greed, we now are in the midst of the worst drug epidemic in American history. Thousands of unsuspecting victims of this corporate greed are now sleeping on the streets, their lives destroyed. I commend City Council for bringing this resolution forward. It's time that these manufacturers and distributors were held accountable. The cost of this epidemic should not be on the shoulders of taxpayers. One would think that our regulatory agencies would protect citizens from this unconscionable behavior, but that's not the case. Last October, 60 Minutes did a story about how the opioid crisis was allowed to spread, aided by Congress, lobbyists, and a drug distribution industry that shipped almost unchecked hundreds of millions of pills to rogue pharmacies and pain clinics. Joe Ranzini, who ran the DEA's Office of Diversion Control, the division that regulates and investigates pharmaceutical industry, reported how the drug industry used their money and influence to pressure top lawyers at the DEA to take a softer approach and managed to push him out. He tells of how a parade of DEA lawyers switched sides and jumped to high-paying jobs, defending the drug industry and seriously undermining the work of the enforcement agency. This past Sunday, 60 Minutes did another story about how opioid makers gave $10 million to advocacy groups, which in turn promote these medications. In April of 2016, Congress effectively stripped the Drug Enforcement Administration of its most potent weapon against large drug companies suspected of spilling prescription narcotics onto the nation's streets. The chief advocate of the law that hobbled the DEA was Representative Tom Marino, a Pennsylvania Republican. Marino was President Trump's nominee to become the nation's next drug czar. He spent years trying to move the law forward in Congress. According to federal filings, $120 million was spent by major drug industry companies, distributors, chain drug stores, and pharmaceutical manufacturers lobbying Congress on this bill and other legislation. With all the money and influence supporting the drug industry, this is going to be a tough battle, but we have to start somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Steve Novick, and I'm here today because I lost my brother Misha to OxyContin. I'm here to ask you to amend this resolution to add some language holding some individuals accountable. The New Yorker and Esquire magazines recently detailed the extensive personal involvement of members of the Sackler family, the founding family of Purdue Pharma, in the deceptive and aggressive marketing of OxyContin. The Sackler family, through contributions to various cultural and educational institutions, including the Guggenheim, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and both Harvard and Yale universities, have their name plastered all over those storied institutions. There is a movement to try to get those institutions to remove the Sackler family name from those buildings, programs, and professorships. And I'm here to ask you to join that movement. I don't see why the Sackler family isn't in prison, but public shaming seems to be one way that we can address them. So what the amendment that I propose that Carla has distributed is to add a couple of whereases and be it further resolved. Whereas members of the Sackler family, which founded Purdue Pharma, makers of OxyContin, including Richard Sackler, were deeply and personally involved in the deceptive marketing of OxyContin. Whereas the Sackler family name has been lionized by numerous major cultural and educational institutions, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Guggenheim, and both Harvard and Yale universities. And then be it further resolved that the council urges all cultural and educational institutions to remove the Sackler family name from any and all exhibits, buildings, professorships, and programs where it is featured and refuse any new contributions from the Sackler family.
Mayor Wheeler,
Commissioner Fish,
as a courtesy to a former colleague who's offered an amendment, I would like to move the amendment, ask for a second so there can be council discussion after the testimony.
Second.
Commissioner Fish moves. Commissioner Udaly seconds.
I've said what I intended to say. I mean, I really appreciate the motion and the second, and I would very much appreciate the City Council taking this action. These are people who the Sackler family is a family of, frankly, mass murderers. They recklessly promoted this drug, knowing it to be dangerous, and as a result, people died. In many states, that's part of the definition of second-degree murder. Apparently, they're not going to be prosecuted for second-degree murder, but it's outrageous that they have their names lionized in so many cultural and educational institutions. And I hope that many thousands of people and institutions throughout the country will call on those institutions to remove the Sackler family name from their buildings, programs, and professorships. So I would, as the brother of Misha, who died of an OxyContin overdose in May 2007, I ask you to take this action to in some way hold these individuals personally responsible for their actions.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate it. Good morning.
Oh,
it's you.
I'm sorry to say I have a head cold, Mr. Mayor. I can't hear what people are saying. That's why I wasn't here last week. So I should take some Sudafed, which is not an opioid, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I do believe that pills, people that take pills, this is a part of a philosophy of rampant materialism. That you think that if you have a lot of stuff, like guns or pills, that you're having a better life. And this is not true. And I don't like people when they say, these pills are keeping me alive. I had a father-in-law that took oxycodone and Xanax, and he was high, and he didn't feel the fact he had walking pneumonia. He couldn't feel his own body. That's why you have pain, so you can feel yourself and feel what's going on. He's walking around high as a kite, no pain at all, and then it was too late. His lungs were too congested. That was it. So, again, it's rampant materialism. I'm glad the president is trying to make some statement that, you know, having a bunch of pills doesn't make your life any safer. And don't tell me stuff like, these pills are keeping me alive. Some may be keeping you alive and others are not keeping you alive. And you can get a tolerance to drugs. You can take them. You have to have more and more, even if they're prescription. You get, you know, it's not, you get a tolerance. So it's materialism, and it's, there are other branches of medicine like surgery and stuff like that. So that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. Appreciate it, all three of you. Thank you, Commissioner Novick.
And the last person is Wayne Wignes.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Wignes. Over the years, I've seen a number of friends go down this road. A funny thing I've noticed is when a larger body of community is allowed to form, they have a way of cleaning themselves up. This is a well-known principle upon which AA meetings are built on, for example. Out here on the streets, I've seen it occur in a natural fashion. And when it's broken up, no offense, but by you guys, it's not long after that you can't recognize the person you've seen because there's nothing left for them to do but drugs, and there's no one left to associate with but the wrong people. It's ironic how we rely on social service agencies that neatly divide people between old and young, homeless, non-homeless, addict versus non-addict. It's ironic because you might say we were evolved to feed off of one another. You know, the old gain vitality from the young learn from the old, the addict gains positive energy from the clean and sober, etc. People need help. I'm sorry, people need each other, not help. And they don't need someone pointing the finger at Big Pharma for their problems. But where have our meeting grounds gone to? What am I to do if I cannot normalize a culture in which the local bar or the local house party full of drugs is if I cannot normalize that without becoming an addict myself? Well, apparently the only answer to that question is to point the finger at the people who happen to be selling us the pills. You members of council know where I'm coming from on this, so too you may understand why I see the hypocrisy in it all. Everybody wants change, yet everybody wants privacy, and everybody's willing to be organized in order to achieve it. Yet we maintain the right to point the finger at the man who's organizing us. 90% of what it takes to keep the domesticated man happy is to grant him his own box. The other 10%, that's what we call politics. That's where all the drama comes in. Let's blame Wall Street for our problems. Let's blame Donald Trump. And today we're blaming Big Pharma. There are a few things more apparent than the domesticated man's.
Pull back a little bit from the mic. That way we can hear you better.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Then the domesticated man's compulsion to blame somebody else for his own problems. But all of these things, Trump included, are cultural phenomena that we helped create every day. Just because you didn't vote for him doesn't mean you didn't help make him president. And just because you didn't sell them a pill doesn't mean you didn't help make them an addict. Now, I have a prediction to make. We let our strategy become one of pointing the finger at Big Pharma for our problems today. Tomorrow, they'll respond by finding a new way to make more money like they always do. Happy President's Day, Portland.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else, Carla?
That's all who signed
Very
up.
Good.
Mayor, I move the amendment.
Commissioner Fish has, you already moved the amendment. It's been moved and seconded, so we'll take, if you could call the roll on the amendment.
Mayor?
Commissioner Saltzman.
Before we call the roll, can we hear from the attorney about her thoughts about the amendment?
Certainly.
So I checked with the attorneys handling litigation. They don't have any concerns. I also confirmed normally we wouldn't have something that's different to the title. I can't think of the technical term, but because it's a resolution, not an ordinance, it's okay to add this as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank Very you. Good. Call the roll on the amendment, please.
Fish.
Former Commissioner Novick, thank you for joining us today and for your very powerful testimony, and I'm honored to support this amendment. Aye.
Saltzman?
Thank you, Commissioner Novick, for bringing this forward. Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's adopted. To the main motion, call the roll.
Fish?
Mayor Wheeler, thank you for taking the lead with the city attorney's office in bringing this forward and rallying all of your colleagues to the cause. I have some prepared remarks that I want to share that are the product of work done by my chief of staff, Sonia Schmansky, and by our tribal liaison, Laura John. And I think it's particularly important that we highlight another dimension of this epidemic that I would not have known about had Laura John, our tribal liaison, not shared this story with us. Of course, I'm very proud of today's action and for the leadership it shows, and I'm grateful that Commissioner Novick has helped us strengthen the resolution. But I want to highlight, Mayor, briefly one aspect of this crisis that has been, in my perspective, underreported. Portland is home to the ninth largest Native American population in the country. Our Native community is descended from more than 380 tribes and adds an incalculable richness to our city and region. This community is also uniquely affected by the opioid crisis. The Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians, which represents 57 sovereign governments across the Northwest United States, held its winter convention in Portland last month. During that convention, the group passed a resolution declaring, quote, support for tribal nations taking on Big Pharma to combat the opioid epidemic in Indian country, end quote. And I want to quote from two findings from their resolution. Quote, whereas the opioid epidemic claims lives in such a way that cumulatively threatens to decimate our individual nations, as the death rate of American Indians from opioid overdose is the highest of any racial demographic, stealing the lives of 8.4 American Indians per every 100,000 in 2014. And, quote, whereas the conduct of pharmaceutical companies has caused a health crisis in Indian country that threatens the health, welfare, and economic security and political integrity of the tribal nations and their citizens, end quote. Pretty powerful stuff. The opioid crisis commands our attention and our action. This lawsuit is about recovering damages for the costs we've incurred managing this issue, and it also makes an important public statement. Over the last generation, the federal government has abandoned local communities time and time again, disinvesting in affordable housing, homelessness services, crumbling roads and bridges, and urgent public health crises ranging from pollution in our rivers to drugs on our streets. None of us in this room has the power to compel the federal government, and in particular this administration, to do the right thing and to appropriately regulate this industry. But we do have a voice, and collectively our voices have power. Today, I proudly stand with my colleagues and with communities across the country calling for accountability and for action in the face of this crisis. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm also very pleased to see this come forward. Marketing and over prescription of opioids is a truly despicable act of exploitation. It's just mind-boggling listening to some of these statistics and stories. Entities we trust with our health are preying on our pain and leaving a wake of ruin, grief, and untold cost to families and communities. So I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The resolution is adopted as amended. Thank you, everybody.